vaccination cancellation, vaccine tourism.
Also faith and immunization.
This is the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm WLRN healthcare reporter Veronica Saragovia. Confusion, frustration, and delays continue plaguing the effort to vaccinate South Floridians.
Houses of worship have been working to test people and get delivery of doses of vaccines. Three faith leaders will join us.
The virus continues spreading throughout the region. Thousands of people are testing positive each day. More people are dying, and new strains are appearing. Meantime, hospitals are canceling appointments as they run out of doses.
Have you tried to get vaccinated? Have you battled the virus? Call us, 800-743-9576. The program made possible by Willie the Bee-Man, Bee Removal Specialist. Welcome to the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm WLRN healthcare reporter Veronica Saragovia. Fewer people were vaccinated for the COVID-19 virus in South Florida over the past week than the week before. Meantime, infections continue ranging throughout the community, and the death toll from the disease keeps climbing. This has been a week of falling vaccinations and rising infections.
Veronica, we've got a lot to talk about in regards to COVID-19 this week here in South Florida. Later on in the program, we're going to hear the latest about the virus, who's catching it, hospitalizations, new strains that could be in the community. And we want to hear from you throughout the hour. Have you tried to get vaccinated? Have you gotten vaccinated? Maybe you've had a vaccine appointment canceled. Have you been frustrated? Have you been reluctant? 800-743-9576. 800-743-WLRN.
The rollout has been rough and unequal. Houses of worship have been working to test people for the virus and deliver doses to their members and the community.
We've got three faith leaders with us as we begin our program live on this Friday. Dr. Eric Jones is the pastor at Koinonia Worship Center in Hollywood. Rabbi Elliot Pearlson is with Temple Menorah in Miami Beach. And Dr. Abdul Samra is the imam at the Islamic Center of Greater Miami. To the three of you, welcome to the program. Pastor Jones, let's begin with you. Have you been able to get vaccines? You have been able to get vaccines, rather, working with your son, the state senator, Chevron Jones, and the State Department of Emergency Services. How did that happen, and will you get more vaccines?
As it relates to getting more, I don't. I know that those that were here, the 500 and plus a few more that was here in the last vaccination, they will be coming back for their second shot. As it relates to that, we'll wait and see. Because of our location and because we have the accommodations to accommodate quite a few people, I hope that we will so that we can best serve our community also up in here. As it relates for me, I just got my second shot on Tuesday.
Well, congratulations. How do you feel?
Feel great. My wife had a few chills, but other than that, she's fine.
Yeah. Pastor Jones, you mentioned 500 doses that the center was able to distribute. Do you have an additional 500 doses for that second shot, or are you expecting to get delivery of those second shot doses?
Well, the thing is that they gave them a return date, and they are supposed to be returning here. I forget the exact date, but it's supposed to be about 19, 20 days after that last injection. So hopefully they're not going to have people lining up out here during that time with no vaccine.
Yeah. How did you decide who would receive the doses?
We didn't decide. We just opened it up, and as a matter of fact, we had over... First of all, we didn't know that there was a limit on the number. So we just opened it up. We had folks as far as from Boca Raton and Delray calling in and listed it. So we basically just opened it up. They call in. We registered them as they called in to my administrators, and they signed them up and wrote them and filled out the papers. over a period, and we had, when they called us and told us they only had 500, we had already signed up over 800. So it was like, wow. Now we had to call back about 300 and tell them after. So it was first come, first serve in the 500. So the first 500, we allowed them to know that they can get in the line. The rest, and really there was over 1,000 after it was all said and done. We didn't register the rest of them, but that about 300 that was over the 500, we had to now recall them as a sense of courtesy to let them know that the department has said they can only do 500.
Wow, so a lot of interest there. Let's bring in Rabbi Elliot Pearlson with Temple Menorah in Miami Beach. Rabbi Pearlson, your synagogue called some members about vaccine availability. Tell us about that. Did you have to do convincing, or did you have a similar, high response rate?
Actually, our program was in cooperation with the city of Miami Beach. We have a phenomenal mayor and his support staff, Mayor Dan Gelber and Michelle Berger, his chief of staff. And they reached out to the major faith communities of Miami Beach. And specifically, they called Temple Menorah because we're usually at the forefront of reaching out to the community when at need. And for example, ever since Hurricane Wilma in 2005, we found that the elderly may not be so familiar with emails and text messaging and WhatsApp or other apps in general, and they were missing out on a lot of information being elderly over the age of 75. So we committed to reaching out to everyone over the age, and we created a emergency call list. And during COVID-19, so frequently, like once a week, to make sure that they're okay. And these are people who may not be familiar or comfortable with, or they may not have smartphones, or they don't know how to use websites and et cetera. So we do our best committee that calls them and make sure that they're okay. And when the mayor called us, we hit the ground running. We had already a call list. And our definition, these are people that are frequently over the age of 75, which was the directive for the city of Miami Beach to give out the vaccine.
Right. So your members are not necessarily on Twitter checking, so you are proactive about it. What about the future? Right.
Exactly.
And about future supply. How about in your synagogue? Have you heard when that will be coming in?
So, I understand that when these patients, when our members, by the way, they weren't just our members. They're even just people from our neighborhood that we happen to know under similar situations. When they received their vaccine, they were also given an exact time to return for their second dose of the vaccine. So they know exactly when to return, and those vaccines are committed for them on their own return.
Rabbi, the connection there breaking up just a little bit, but we heard about the second doses there. Let's bring in Dr. Samra with the Islamic Center of Greater Miami. Dr. Samra, Jackson Memorial contacted you last week offering some appointments. What was the response?
The response was very good. What we did is we are given 150 appointments last week, and once we got the message from Jackson, we spread the word among our community through social media, and the response was huge. So we got over, we had only 100 appointments, we got over 300 requests.
Wow.
We submitted our list last week, and for this week we had also given, which is in fact today, 200 appointments for vaccination. We still have a long waiting list, probably over 300, about 250, waiting for, hopefully, for another opportunity, I hope next week.
And Dr. Samra, have you done the first come, first serve, or is there some other eligibility or selection
No, just first come, first serve. And of course, we taking 65 and over, you know, that, you know, that the criteria.
Yeah.
And yeah, first come, first serve.
And all members of the community, regardless if they're members of the mosque or not?
Yes, all members of the community. And anyone that we spread this message out, our neighbor. So this.
Dr. Samra, I think we lost you there on the telephone, but I know we're going to take some phone calls here as well. We are listening to the South Florida Roundup. Tom Hudson, Veronica Zaragovia, and you at 800-743-9576, speaking with three faith leaders here in South Florida regarding vaccine distribution. Brenda in Miami Gardens is with us now. Go ahead, Brenda. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I took my 89-year-old mother to Dr. Jones, Reverend Jones's church to get the shot, and it was so easy and professional to get through. I felt it was necessary for me to get it right away because I'd already had some girlfriends whose parents that they were taking care of had been exposed to the virus through other family members and had passed away. So I wanted to get my mother in as soon as possible, and the process was so nice. It was so easy. So I really appreciate it.
Brenda, I'm sorry to hear about the loss, but wonderful to hear about that smooth experience that you had with Pastor Jones. 800-743-WLRN, asking for you to share your stories of vaccination. Smooth stories like Brenda's, and I'm sure, Veronica, plenty of frustrated stories as well.
That's right. And, you know, I heard earlier today about a Black church in Opa-locka that was going to have vaccinations. And I'm wondering for our guests, if you could comment on how houses of worship should be utilized and maybe any advice as we move forward and more people get vaccinated and the role that you can play in both dismissing misinformation and getting more people to get vaccinated. Maybe we, Dr. Jones, are you on the line?
Yes.
Maybe, is there any, in terms of organization or any advice that you have either for officials or for other leaders of churches or houses of worship would like to do something similar? Any advice that you have or about how the houses of worship could be used?
Yeah, we had contacted BSO, which basically supported us. And we had some Coast Guard members here that also helped direct traffic. And we also had my staff, which I have about 14 on staff that actually handled the registration, handled the orderly movement. I had deacons. We had about 45 people that help coordinate, organize, and direct traffic and make sure that everything ran smoothly.
Okay, now I'm going to bring in Dr. Samra because he might have to leave us soon. Can you, any insight on the kind of help that you've needed to organize the vaccinations and moving forward, if you know, what you would advise to make this process go smoothly?
Yeah, we no question we facing the you know the challenges. Of course, there is one emotional due to the concern that people may have about the vaccine safety and side effects, and the other one is availability of the vaccines. As we hear, what we did is try to get the people, I mean, to spread the word out and also make sure that we spread awareness to our communities about the importance of the vaccine. And at the same time, we created like a managed reservation and appointment systems, and we were able to help with the coordinating appointments. I think the only thing is now is to have more appointment for more people to be vaccinated.
Absolutely. I'm happy to hear there's a great demand. And Dr. Abdul Samra is the Imam at the Islamic Center of Greater Miami. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
continuing to take your phone calls, hearing your vaccine or vaccination experiences. 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. You could also send us a note on Twitter, at WLRN. Maybe you joined Twitter over the past couple of weeks to try to get updates on when vaccination appointments may be opened up. I know that's been a popular way for some local officials to communicate those appointments. Warren in Delray Beach on the blue line, line three. Go ahead, Warren.
Thank you very much for taking my call. First, I am one of the legions of people who don't do the internet. So it would be very nice when we listen to your fine program and to WLRN when they have ads and messages, to have ways to contact without going to a website. That's the first thing. Second, yeah. And I was a medical proofreader, just a point of interest. The only real vaccination is the one for smallpox, because they took Edward Jenner, who discovered that immunization, took matter from a milkmaid's hand who had had cowpox, which is not as virulent, and then you would develop an immunity to the to smallpox. So technically, it comes from vaca, Latin and Spanish for cow.
Right. I appreciate the linguistic correction, Warren. Yeah. So tell me, and it's great to hear from you again, Warren.
Thank you.
You know, the population, and for the rabbi and for the pastor, right? And the rabbi referenced this as well. The population that aren't on Twitter, they're not on Facebook. Right, they're not hitting refresh on their browser constantly at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. To have that kind of assistance, Warren, are you finding those sources of information? That
not real. What I'm doing is, of course, as I'm doing now, I am listening to this fine radio station. I think also people could call 211 and get to the resource center. They may have information.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the things to start getting out there, and then get the word, and basically also places where maybe you could go on a walk-in. I'm a very patient guy, and after all, you're being a patient when you go. So I'm otherwise being careful, and
good.
I'm waiting for this stuff to be properly distributed, and then, Lord willing, I'll go and I'll get my immunity, not my immune system, my immunity system tuned up with the wonderful stuff. So, again, we need more ways to learn to call, to access where in our areas the immunization is available, the medicine, so that we can follow up at the responsible
Warren way. I appreciate you calling in. It's nice to hear from you again. Warren there joining us from Delray Beach.
And as Warren, he's upbeat and all, but it is very concerning for some people to find out how they can get this information. We're going to turn now to Connie in Margate. Hi, Connie.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for having these programs. They're very important.
Well, we appreciate your call.
Thanks. I was very, very fortunate, and my husband was too, to be able to get the vaccine last week at Coral Square, but it was really a fluke. It was just, we had a small window of opportunity, and while I'm grateful for it, I just don't think this is the way things should happen. There's a lot of unfairness in how the vaccines are, how people can get appointments, and it seems like everything is scattered all over the place. And, we really need to have a coordinated effort so people can get an appointment and even be put on a waiting list. And then it should be very, it should work very, very well so that people can be contacted when their turn comes up so they can have an appointment. Okay. I just got in by sheer luck. I had found out from somebody else that they were giving them out at the Coral Square Mall, and it was like the second day or something, and a lot of people didn't show up for their appointment. So my husband, my friend and her husband went, and I went and my husband went, and there was maybe a half hour, of opportunity, and then they stopped letting people in without appointments because I didn't have an appointment. But that's not fair. That's not the way it should be run, okay? And a lot of, as you discussed, a lot of people do not have accessibility to making appointments. They don't know how to get on the internet, don't even have computers.
Right, and this is how vaccines could go to waste as well. At that point, we don't know. Hopefully, they were able to use all those doses.
They did. They only had like 400 or 500 something. So, and I was number 352. So, but anyway, but then I heard from my friend yesterday. She has a granddaughter that works at Tradewinds Park. She's part of the Broward, is part of the Broward County Park System. And this girl is 16 years old, and she was offered the vaccine. Now, those people should not be getting vaccines. We are not vaccinating the teachers and the frontline workers, and they have the ability to give these vaccines to the people that work in the park. That is not fair or equitable. We need to take care of, we're making the teachers go into the schools. They have to be there. They are at great risk, and all the employees in the school. This is a very disconnected, uncoordinated effort, and it's just so infuriating. You know, and people that are, I have people that live in my community that are over 80, they can't get an appointment. They cannot get an appointment.
Well, Connie, so we hear your frustration. We appreciate your call. And hopefully that officials listening will start working on organizing this better.
I'm wondering about communications here, because it is so key. We just heard from Connie and from Warren about communications, how important that is. Rabbi Perlson, with members of your synagogue, how has communication gone? What has communication been like for the vaccine with your members?
So I think the health professions have to acknowledge that the primary recipients are supposed to be over the age of 75, comorbidities. And that's actually the very specific part of our community that makes technology savvy and able to get, like, as you just expressed, updates, et cetera, et cetera. So I think one of the things that our healthcare professionals and has to be, you know, our governments, our faith-based community leadership, we have to figure out ways to reach out to that very specific group that needs it the most. Yes, if you're over the age of 75 and or if you're in a specialty care facility, fine, you'll be taken care of. But what about in our community? There are hundreds of people over the age of 75 that are living alone, and like one woman called and thanked our office staff. It's in addition to the City of Miami Beach, our office staff, Lily and Danny and Roz, they were unbelievable. They called every single person in our synagogue over a certain age.
I want to put the same question to Dr. Jones, Rabbi. Apologies for interrupting. Short on time here a little bit, but Pastor Jones, how about the communication to your membership?
Communication to the membership has been very effective. We basically get communication out through our live stream. We have small services, and we also have a line where we basically contact all of our members by, I forget the type of phone call they do it, but they put it on call, and we keep them informed that way. And so from that, they'll basically know what's going on. But again, we don't have a lot of over 65. We have a few, but most of the people that came in were over 55 and not basically from our local assembly. I guess we had about 30 or 40, if that many, and the rest come from outside. But we still communicated with them, and they have our number, and we still... And we received letters from quite a few of them thanking us for the smooth transition.
Yeah. Pastor Jones, thanks for sharing your experience with us. Dr. Eric Jones, the pastor at the Koinonia Worship Center in Hollywood. Rabbi, thank you for your time here on this Friday afternoon as well. Rabbi Elliot Perlson with Temple Menorah in Miami Beach. Earlier, we spoke with Dr. Abdul Samra, the imam at the Islamic Center of Greater Miami. Lots more to come here, Veronica. We need to talk about the latest on the virus itself. We've been concentrating on vaccinations, and importantly so.
That's right.
But the state of the virus here continues to spread. Have you or someone you know caught the germ? Have you battled this disease? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to the South Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm WLRN healthcare reporter Veronica Saragovia. Thousands of people have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in South Florida this week. Hundreds are hospitalized as the virus continues spreading. And at least one new strain has shown up in Florida.
Yeah, have you battled this germ? Are you keeping up with social distancing, wearing a mask, washing your hands? 800-743-WLRN. We're going to talk about the state of the virus itself as it continues to spread in our community. 800-743-9576.
And we turn now to our guest, Dr. Eileen Marty. She's an infectious diseases expert at Florida International University. Dr. Marty, welcome. Hi. If you could help us understand the state of the virus in South Florida right now. I mean, we hear of these really high daily average increases of cases. How are things right now?
Well, so we've been averaging overall in the state somewhere between 9 to 12% positivity rate. And we did start to go up very dramatically after the holidays. But that's sort of leveled off now. And in our hospitals, it's, you know, it varies a little bit day by day, but we are able to manage the number of cases at this time.
And how concerned should we be? Because this summer we had an instance of an increase of 15,000 cases in a 24-hour period, and that made national headlines. And now we're kind of averaging similar daily increases all the time. So how do you compare this to the earlier surges we've had?
Well, you have to look at each situation differently. There is, you know, if you look at the world right now, we have almost 98 million cases reported with way over 2 million cases, deaths that are known to have resulted from this disease. Proportionally speaking, in Florida, we have a very significant load. We've had 1.5 million or actually 1.584 million residents that have been positive, almost 25,000 deaths. And that's very, very, very tragic. A lot of it could have been prevented had we as a community come together and followed more stringently the public health measures that we were informed about. And if you look at Miami-Dade in particular, we're still the fourth most affected county of all the thousands of counties throughout the United States. And that's a very dubious honor, And on top of that, we're the seventh most in terms of deaths of counties throughout the United States. That's a very dubious honor.
And when it comes to who's getting infected, has that been changing at this point?
Yes, it has. In Miami-Dade, the median age has dropped down to about 40. We initially had a much higher median age, then it slowly dropped down to about 43. But in recent couple of months, it's dropped down to age 40. And that's actually consistent with what's happening in many parts of the world and also many parts of the United States.
And I have another question for you about hospitalizations. You mentioned they're high but stable. And why would you say we're not seeing the overload that cities like, for instance, Los Angeles are seeing?
Well, you know, nobody has a perfect answer to that question. What I can tell you is, for example, in California, they've detected their own unique California strain. And we're still teasing out whether that strain has some impact on the percent of people that end up in the hospital. So far, there's no evidence of that. But remember, it's always, always a numbers game. If you think about it, if you were a virus, right, and you wanted to infect a lot of people, you don't want them to be deathly ill all the time, because then they're in their little cave or in their little home and they're not out and about where they can infect other people. So let's consider three important coronaviruses that have caused a lot of problems. The SARS virus back in 2003, the MERS virus that we have known about from since 2012 and is still around, still causing problems. And then this one, if you look at that, The SARS virus had about a 9.19 fatality rate. It wound up infecting a grand total of 8,096 people, which is seems like such a small number compared to the numbers we're looking at now daily. And it killed 744. The MERS virus would kill kills about 34.4% of the people that it infects. But because it's so miserable and the way that it interacts with the host defense systems, people aren't out and about. And therefore, it's affected less than 3,000 people. In fact, 2,494 with 858 deaths. But now, if you look at that in comparison to what's going on with COVID, which has a lower mortality somewhere between, and it depends on the area of the world you're in, somewhere between 1.8 to 2.8% death rate, we've had 97,782,000 cases. I mean, that's crazy. And 2,098,000 deaths. That's just, it's because of that difference in how the virus affects people. So now that you have these variants, and these variants are much more contagious, that's actually an increased risk for having more people in the hospital. Mm.
Dr. Marty, stick with us. We've got some phone calls, questions about the vaccine, questions about the state of the virus. Dr. Eileen Marty is with us, infectious diseases expert at Florida International University. Marlene in Miami on line two. Marlene, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm wondering why, since Miami-Dade and Broward counties have the highest population, the highest infection rate, why we are not doing more to go to those big population centers. It seems to me that you could save more people here. And today in today's Herald, I had a thing saying that CVS is going to be distributing vaccines, but not in Dade and Broward. They are in Palm Beach. They are in Monroe County. Why not here? It seems to me if you want to save lives, it's important to look at these population centers, and I want to know why we're being shifted here.
Marlene, it's a good question. Back to that numbers game, Dr. Marty, right? I mean, the allocation of vaccines, we know there's a supply problem, supply issue, but the allocation proportionally in Florida, how does that strike you?
I think that Marlene is 100% correct. We should be allocating according to the risks. And I think all the mayors of every part of Miami-Dade, as well as the mayor of Miami-Dade and the mayor of Broward and all their mayors feel exactly the same way as Marlene. The counties that are suffering the most should, of course. And of course, if you look at Miami-Dade, we also have the highest percent in the state of elderly individuals. So there's another reason that we need a higher proportion of vaccines, in order to just meet what the governor has put in his executive orders. So it would be much better if the vaccine distribution matched the risk.
And Dr. Marty, a question on that, on the distribution. We're hearing about cancellations at a couple of hospitals in our region. Would you pinpoint that to a problem of supply or how they've been administered? And should we not be panicked, or what's your take on that?
Okay, so here's the bottom line. The bottom line is the new administration of President Biden has committed to assuring that the supply chain gets increased. But there is obviously a problem of supply. Many places that have been doing vaccinations, various hospitals like Jackson and Baptist and so forth, were promised more supply than is now even available to give to those hospital settings. And so very reluctantly, they've had to cancel appointments. I can assure you, having seen their operations firsthand and even participated in as a vaccinator in their programs, I can tell you that the operation is smooth as silk once you're in there, but it is a matter of having enough vaccine.
Yes, and that's what we've been hearing as well from listeners who've gotten vaccinated. We're going to bring in Tom in Miami now. Hi, Tom.
I've been listening to all this very closely, and this is what I'm about to say is not why I called in, but in hearing what's being said, you have to have a plan to execute it. And I was fortunate enough to get into Jackson. And from the time that I made the appointment, there was a complete follow through. Text messages, emails. When I got to Jackson South, there were police officers directing you into a specific parking lot. You got into a line. People were social distancing. You had a time slot that you were there. They went inside. They took your data. Then you went in, and it was Miami-Dade firefighters who were actually giving you the inoculation. At that point, they hit a timer, and you sat down in a chair. There were probably 20 people in the room, and 15 to 20 minutes later, you were walking out the door. Within 6 hours of that, I received the notification of when I would receive my next shot. And shortly thereafter, all of a sudden, they're giving inoculations at Hard Rock, and when you scatter it everywhere, then the people who are truly going to be able to consolidate that information, which I'm sure Jackson and Baptist and those people are doing, then you're going to know what the supply and demand is. Right now, we know that there is no plan. There is no plan.
And where did you get your first shot?
It was a week ago this past Monday, so I get the second shot February 1st.
Well, we're going to now ask Dr. Marty a question about, and thank you, Tom. I don't know if you had another question before we turn to our expert.
I wanted to say that Jackson did an admirable job from my point of view, completely. So I think that the hospital systems, and it's all in the tracking, the tracing, but the more widely that you distribute this, the less control that you're going to have over being able to allocate or know when the second disbursements are going to come from. That's it. Thank you all. Doing a great job.
Well, some good news in there as well. And Dr. Marty, I wanted to ask you as well about the strains that we know are now in Florida. If you could talk about what listeners should know about these strains and how infectious they are.
So we have detected what's called the UK strain because it was initially detected in early December in the United Kingdom when they saw this kind of huge uptick in cases in southeastern England. So they did an epidemiologic investigation, and then they started to sequence some virus and realized that a large percentage, over 50%, almost 60% of the cases were from one unique set of mutations, which is now called the UK variant. Then they went back in their files and looked at some material that they had saved and were able to sequence older samples and detected that it had been around since as long ago as at least the 20th of September. So now it has pretty much taken over many, many parts of England and has spread to many countries. I think 60 countries was the latest number, including, of course, the United States and including here in Florida. The tricky thing about these variants is that when we normally test people for COVID-19, we don't sequence the virus. We only hunt out two very unique parts of the virus. And that's what PCR is all about, looking for two very unique parts. If those are there, we know that what we've detected is the COVID virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, but it doesn't tell us which one someone has. And we have to be suspicious in order to do that sequencing. And I tell you all this because we don't know how many variants there really are in South Florida. We don't know what percentage of our people have the variants in South Florida because it's not part of the routine process. And it can't be because it takes much more time and money to do that per person. So we have to have a reason to take that extra step. And so we've worked out here in at various hospitals and at various universities ways to hint that that what we're looking at might be the variant, and then those samples sequence them, and that's how we've been detecting the UK variant in our area.
Right. And Dr. Marty, I wanted to ask you about treatments. I got an email earlier today about the monoclonal antibodies treatment at Memorial, which is a large safety net hospital. And so we used to hear about that as being a treatment for people with financial means. But could you talk about what treatments are being used that weren't available earlier in the pandemic that are accessible to more people?
Yeah, so first of all, let's talk about the various monoclonal antibodies. There's two available right now. There's one by Eli Lilly and the other one by Regeneron. And both of them have the same principle in mind. They are synthetic antibodies that attack the spike protein that is critical for the virus to get into our cells and cause disease. So these have been very effective. In fact, in our hospitals, we're actually bringing people in without actually admitting them to the hospital, giving them the monoclonal antibodies, and we're able to send them home, which is one of the reasons that our hospitals aren't stacking up with patients, because we're managing them thanks to these monoclonal antibodies. They are very effective at what they do. But you'll notice if it's your turn to get a vaccine, that you're going to be asked if you've received monoclonal antibodies, because they're really good. They do a wonderful thing for taking care of the patients, but at the same time, they make our own immune system lazy. And our lazy immune system says, oh, somebody else is taking care of the problem? Fine. And so it doesn't wake up and create its own long-term immunity. So people who've had the monoclonal antibodies will, you know, they get the treatment they need and deserve, but they're definitely going to need the vaccine.
Well, Dr. Eileen Marty, an infectious diseases expert with Florida International University, it's always a pleasure to have your insight. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Stick with us. More to come on the South Florida Roundup, the uneven rollout of the vaccine in South Florida, and your calls, 800-743-WLRN. Stick around. Back on the South Florida Roundup here on WLRN. Thanks for listening and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm WLRN healthcare reporter Veronica Saragovia. Even as the effort to vaccinate Floridians has been met with limited supply, enormous demand, and sometimes confusing messages, it also has been uneven. Black people in Miami-Dade County account for 8% of the total confirmed cases and 17% of the deaths, but only 6% of those vaccinated. The disparities exist in Broward and Palm Beach counties as well. And Dr. Zinzi Bailey is a social epidemiologist at the University of Miami, where she studies health equity. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Why is there such a gap, Dr. Bailey, in the proportion of Black people who have been vaccinated?
So I think what we're seeing over the course of this COVID pandemic is that all of the outcomes and how we're rolling things out are falling along existing fault lines of social inequities. So it's bringing to the fore all the elements of structural racism that pattern how we access health promoting and health damaging resources and essentially how we are able to access care. So when we're talking about vaccination, this is basically following the same patterns that we were seeing with testing when they were first rolling out testing, right? We're kind of defaulting to a particular model of providing the vaccination, using our systems, particularly our health systems, to have people come to us, right? What we learned during the testing process was that people who don't have health insurance, have a fear of the hospital, perhaps because of previous experiences, discriminatory experiences, or if they're undocumented, are not going to be accessing our health system. And it's not going to be a primary line of defense for marginalized communities. What we did learn from the testing earlier in this pandemic is that what works is going into communities and being able to have conversations with people to dispel myths, to be able to understand concerns, and being able to truly engage with community members and accurately communicate.
And Dr. Bailey, you and I had spoken in December, and you had mentioned that you had been helpful to your mother's church and helping to explain how the vaccines work. It's been a lot of, I wonder how you know, less than 1 in 4 of Miami-Dade firefighters and EMS staff have been vaccinated. And Jackson Health has vaccinated far fewer healthcare workers who work there. And I'm wondering, from your experience, is it that there's just been too little information for people to get past reluctance and maybe left to the churches to try to fill in the gaps? What do you think is happening?
So I would say that when we're talking about vaccine hesitancy and that kind of work, we are couching this within a larger ecosystem. So I definitely, you know, I'm still talking with the affirmative aging group of my mom's church. And, you know, people have concerns and basic information that they want to know. I think as we've been acting in urgency, there hasn't been as much of a plan around communication. So I think there are kind of three arms of the vaccination campaign around distribution, thinking about equity in that, thinking about the logistics and the equity in that, and thinking about communication and the equity in that. If we're relying on Twitter, if we're relying on, somebody with resources contacting family members or anything like that, or we're relying on online systems, we are going to systematically miss a lot of people and people who have questions. Yeah. I think it would be a missed opportunity to not engage with frontline workers who chose not to be vaccinated. There may be specific reasons that may be reflected in our communities, and that would be our first line of kind of ambassadors, but also just learning what the concerns in our communities is, right? Like, the concerns are going to be numerous. Perhaps some of our healthcare workers have gotten COVID, and, you know, they're unsure whether they should be taking up valuable resources. But there might be true concerns around vaccination.
And, you know, as you mentioned, Wi-Fi could even be a luxury for many people.
Absolutely.
What would you say is the impact? I mean, we for instance, today, Jackson helped to host a vaccination event at a Black church. Could that help to counteract the impact of canceling vaccine appointments on the general public's interest when getting vaccinated if it's done on a smaller scale?
I would say that, being able to partner with Black churches is one step forward, but it's not a systemic solution. Community engagement and being able to have community, engagement, true community engagement, have credible messengers around the vaccine is helpful. But until we have more accountability system-wide, we're not really going to get at the key issues of equity here. We know that, we use vaccines, we thaw batches of vaccines, and sometimes there are leftover vaccines, right? There's some kind of call list at some point. But who's on that call list and what are their characteristics? Are they meeting criteria? Are they our collective priorities, right? Are they meeting our collective priorities? So I think having some level of transparency and accountability in our efforts towards equity are going to get us that much further.
Absolutely.
Along with these community engagement events.
And Dr. Zinzi Bailey, we're going to have to leave it there, but that's certainly not the end of this conversation. Dr. Zinzi Bailey is a social epidemiologist at the University of Miami, where she studies health equity. Thank you so much for sharing your insight with us.
Thank you so much.
That'll do it for the South Florida Roundup this week. Thanks for listening. It is produced by Denise Royal. Engagement editor is Katie Leprey. Lance Dixon is our digital editor. News director is Terrence Shepard.
Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's director of radio programming is Jason Zabka. The director of radio operations and the show's technical supervisor is Peter J. Mertz. Richard Ives answers the phones. And I'm Veronica Saragovia.
Great to spend some time with you here, Veronica. Lots of important information. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for calling, listening, tweeting, and supporting public radio. This program is made possible by Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialist. Thank you.